This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
In some ways, hard to imagine we're already talking about the 2026 election, but we are. And a number of candidates already announcing in various races. One of those on Monday, Christine Drazen, making her second run for governor. She joins us live this afternoon. Christine, thanks for being on.
Kyle, thanks for having me again. It's good to talk.
So you announced your candidacy. A lot of folks were expecting this, but go into what led to making the decision.
It was really about our state, and I just feel this sense of urgency to do everything that I can to make things better. Not getting better on its own. Feels like it's getting worse. I don't know, you know, if your listeners are experiencing what we're experiencing up at our house, but it is not the kind of leadership that we deserve as Oregonians right now. We should be number one in the nation for a place to start a business, grow a business, certainly to have a family and grow your family. And we aren't. We should be number one in the nation for just a world-class education for our kids. And instead, they're still struggling with some of the worst test scores in the nation. There's no reason for that. We have great teachers. We have incredible business leaders. We have an incredible place, our natural resources, our oceans, our mountains. I mean, you just cannot compare with this place and our people. And yet people are leaving in droves. And I really believe that leadership can make a huge difference in all of those things. I am committed to working to have Oregon be the number one state in the nation where people want to live, grow their business and raise their family. And that is what the governor's race is about for me, being accountable to Oregonians and representing their goals and their values.
You know, I took a look this morning and I was actually kind of surprised. 11 people already running for governor between the two parties, about 10 of them not really well known at all. But this early on, I remember what we had last time. Are you expecting a long list of candidates in both parties?
I think there's going to be, like there always is, a lot of passion among Oregonians to be a part of change. And I think that that's healthy. I think that represents really how we have moved as a state in the wrong direction. And, you know, good-hearted Oregonians are raising their hands saying, I want to fight for the future of our state, too. And we will have a primary, and then we will move on to the general election. I mean, the governor hasn't even declared that she wants to run for her seat again. She hasn't even raised her hand and said that I want the privilege of leading the state as governor again. And I find just her complete absence from every single conversation to be so pathetic. It just feels like every single issue she's absent. And right now we're facing an end to SNAP benefits for over 700,000 Oregonians. That's going to hit November the 1st, this upcoming Saturday. She hasn't said a peep. We need to be planning as a state. What are we going to do for families going into the holidays to make sure that they have food on the table? And she's been absent from that conversation the same way she was absent from the conversation about how do we balance the budget at the Department of Transportation. In the same way, she was absent from the conversations about how she was going to keep kids safe who were in the youth foster system, who were being abused and harmed in those systems. Again and again and again and again, she has been absent from her leadership responsibilities.
Do you feel like there's any possibility that she won't run again?
Well, it's possible that if she looked herself in the mirror, she'd realize that she's not doing a very good job. And if she really cared about the future of our state, she probably should find something else to do. But I don't know what she's going to decide. But I can tell you that she hasn't even met her own standards for her own service. When she was running last time and we were running against each other, she made some pretty big claims about what she was going to accomplish for the state, and she hasn't achieved a single one of them. And so if she's there to make a difference for the state and she's not getting that job done, I hope she'll choose to do something else with her life.
What are the main areas of focus for your campaign?
I am 100% focused on quality of life issues and affordability. So if you take a look right now at Oregon, we're among the highest taxed and least affordable states in the nation. That is of our own making. That's something that, you know, lawmakers in Salem did to Oregonians themselves. We don't have to have taxes as high as they are, and we should reduce those taxes. So it's pretty straightforward. Cut taxes, get rid of the red tape, expedite permitting, expedite all of the bureaucracy so that we can have job creators, really hire more folks and get our economy going again. But first and foremost is always going to be making sure that Oregonians who love this place can afford to live here and raise their families.
We have seen a number of businesses in Oregon move corporate headquarters out in the last few years, or some do expansion in other states, not in Oregon. How do you change that?
Well, we change it by being a business-friendly environment for the first time in more than 20 years. You have to listen to people that are out there creating jobs and ask them, What made you grow in Nevada instead of Arizona? Or what made you move to Texas or Florida instead of Oregon? And it's the policies there. The policies there, they want businesses there. They don't make it hard to do business there. It's the regulatory environment. It's the tax environment. We just make it too hard here. And people try it. They come here because they love it, because it's beautiful, and it doesn't have, you know, 110 degree temperatures all summer long. But they find it's hard to employ people here. They find it's hard to actually keep their business running. We can change that, but we have to listen to our job creators first and see how we can work with them and partner with them to make this an environment that welcomes them here.
Now, of course, you begin with the primaries early on. One of the tricks, maybe is not the best word for it, but one of the things in Oregon has been, with a state that is so diverse and really kind of split in terms of Republicans versus Democrats and conservatives and moderate conservatives versus progressives, is how do you stay in the GOP lane yet cross the aisle and get support from other parties when you get to the general election?
I think the thing that Oregonians share in common, regardless of political affiliation, is that they want the freedom to be able to live their lives and chase their own hopes and dreams. I don't think that's partisan. I think that the problems that are facing us for affordability, addiction, homelessness, schools, all of that, jobs, the economy, those aren't partisan issues. I'm sure you've heard before people say, you know, potholes aren't partisan. I feel that way about the issues that are plaguing our state right now. We're not talking about divisive party-based issues. We're talking about bad leadership, and we're talking about mediocre leadership and poor policy choices that we've got to reverse. And so those are not GOP lane issues. Those are, Oregon is failing. We have got to improve. And I think that crosses party lines.
Talk about the state budget, what your thoughts are on changes and priorities you would like to see in place.
You know, Oregon state budget, people would be stunned and surprised by this, but it has doubled in the last 10 years. And today the state budget's about $138 billion with a B. There is a lot of room to do better by Oregonians themselves with that much money to be able to invest in our future. So again, I think that the number one thing to look at for this budget is to see where we can cut costs, where we can reduce fees, where we can reduce taxes, and then live within our means. The budget right now for the state of Oregon is so political. Like, if you looked at what our agencies do, you would just be stunned at how much of the work at an agency level is very, very agenda-driven political stuff. It is absolutely a lot of climate and DEI and all those kinds of things. And that's not core mission to Oregon's agencies. That's the work of individuals. That's the work of the nonprofit community. Government needs to build roads. Government needs to educate our kids. You know, government needs to take the criminals and lock them up. We should not be in the business of advancing a political agenda. So that stuff's got to go. And then we have to have accountability, and we need to start to tear up some of the regulatory burden that we have on Oregonians, and that will also help us with the budget. Every single rule that we have out there takes some staffer, some employee to be able to push that paper around. And we need to be able to live within our means, and we need to be able to tighten our belt at a state level. And so the budget cannot grow at the pace that it's been growing. Oregonians just can't afford it.
Recently, the legislature passed, after a lengthy process, the transportation package regarding the Oregon Department of Transportation budget. Polling showed Oregonians not favoring it, but it did pass, still waiting for the governor to actually sign it. If you were faced with that whole situation, what would you have done differently for ODOT funding?
I had a plan during the legislative session to make sure that we funded really essential workers and essential services. I had a plan to make sure that we had folks on the ground to plow the roads and stripe and keep our roads safe. And you can do that within existing resources. You don't need new taxes to provide government services. I know that that's new information for Tina Kotek, but you don't need to raise taxes to provide basic government services. And my plan would have done that. And working with Republicans in the House and the Senate, we pushed all session long to get that agency to live within its means. You know, we have a payroll tax today that imposes itself on every single Oregon worker across our state. And these Democrats doubled it. And they doubled it because they want to continue to fund transit across our state. And I got nothing against transit, but I would say that Oregonians should not be forced to pay for somebody else's free fare across from one side of Portland to another side of Portland. And that the people that ride the trains and the buses in Portland should pay their own fare. And they should not push that off on workers in Roseburg. But that's exactly what's happening today. So I think it's really important that Tina Kotek stops ignoring Oregon voters and that she signs that bill. Right now, she is trying to keep Oregon voters from having the last word on how expensive it is to live here. Because she knows they don't agree with her. She's got to know that they cannot afford those new taxes and that they think what she did was wrong. And now she's ignoring them again, disrespecting them again, and refusing to sign the bill. As soon as she signs the bill, we're off and running to get signatures on it and put it in front of voters for the November ballot. But right now she's trying to make sure that that does not happen. And I think what she's doing is wrong.
What is the role of state lawmakers, of state government, in advocating for funds from the federal level?
You know, Oregon has always had its hand out much more so than other states. We are more dependent on federal funding than I think we're fourth in the nation for how much money we bring in for federal dollars per capita. And so we have been twisting around our programs year after year after year, trying to draw down more federal dollars. I think that the federal government and state government must be partners in serving our constituents. There's a role for the federal government to make sure that, for example, our hunger programs, our food programs, are federal programs, and the state, you know, wouldn't be able to fund that at the level that the federal government can. So that's absolutely the safety net is a critical role for the federal government. Social Security, critical role for the federal government. But Oregon has got to learn to live within its means. And right now, as the federal government has changed some of their requirements for some of their programs and is in the process of changing some of those requirements, Oregon should follow the law, and Oregon should recognize that we cannot perpetually live in a deficit. And that's, you know, and if you push back and you say, hey, the feds can never change their rules, the feds have to perpetually grow, that just puts a burden on your kids and my kids and our grandkids that they just cannot afford into the future. So I think that there is a role for the federal government to work with the state and certainly, you know, roads, building roads, ensuring that we have a solvent Social Security system, all those things I think are important. You get too far past that and it's federal overreach and it's time for us to curb the growth of government.
You were within about 3 points of Tina Kotek in the last general election. Presuming she runs again, presuming you get through the primary process, what would you do differently to ensure a win this time?
I think the biggest thing that I talk to people about, you tell me what's different now. Has anything changed in the last 3 years? Has anything gotten better for Oregonians? Has anything gotten better for Oregonians since Tina Kotek's been governor? I think this is a time for Oregonians to hold her accountable for her leadership. And if she has not been doing the job she said she would do, it's time for Oregonians to choose someone who can. And that's what this election is about. This election is about choices. Who do you want to lead our state? Who do you believe can turn our state around? And if you like the job Tina Kotek is doing, then you've already got your candidate. But if your family feels like things have not gotten better in the last 3 years, if your family thinks like instead feels like things have gotten more expensive and your job doesn't feel as certain and your industry is suddenly not as strong and your family is suddenly struggling and your kids are not getting a better education and everything is getting more expensive, then we need change in Oregon. And I want to be a part of leading that change to make Oregon the best that it possibly can be. Number one in the nation for jobs, number one in the nation for affordability, number one in the nation for our schools, and really a world-class education. And we can do that, but we can't do that with Tina Kotek. She has proven that she is not capable of it. She has proven that she, in fact, can't do the job.
Now, last time around, you really had a three-way race with the state senator, former state senator Betsy Johnson, in as a non-affiliated candidate. What do you do if you end up with that again?
You know, this is still a race for the hearts and minds of Oregonians. This is an opportunity to persuade Oregonians to stand up and fight for the future together. And I am not at all concerned about a third-party candidate. There's no doubt in the last race that Betsy Johnson ran a campaign that went after center right voters across the state. She was absolutely trying to reach into Republican supporters and Republican donors, and she was certainly making the case in that way. But I think I think they know better this time. I think they recognize that she was a spoiler in that last race, and I just don't think that they'll be fooled again.
What's been the reaction in the last 48 hours after you made the announcement on Monday that you were running again? What about fundraising? What about maybe any supporters you could talk about yet?
You know, I am really grateful for just the outpouring of support that I've received since the announcement. I mean, people have just been incredibly excited, and the team is growing. The momentum is growing by the day. This has got to be a movement. This is not, you know, just me raising my hand saying I want to serve the state. This is Oregonians coming together to get this done together. This is a movement. It's a team. This isn't just me. This isn't just one person. This is the future of our state is on the line. The future of our state is on the ballot this election cycle, and people are energized. People are excited for this opportunity. I think that there was a lot to be learned from that last election cycle, and certainly now Tina can't hide from her record. She can't point at Kate Brown and say it wasn't me. All of this is her. All of this falls at her feet, and it's important to hold her accountable for that. But people have been incredibly gracious, and I am humbled to be able to have the support of Oregonians across the state, financial, volunteer, you know, signs, and certainly just encouragement and prayers, all that stuff. It just meant the world to me. And it's going to take all that and more to get this done. We're going to have to work together if we want to take our state back.
In the midst of all this, you moved from the House to the Senate, taking a vacant seat last week. How do you keep up with a campaign, being in a new chamber, and all your legislative work for the folks in your district?
Yeah, that is always the case for anybody that is in an elected office. And then should they choose to run for a different elected office, that's always the responsibility. Certainly that faced, you know, Tobias Reed. Tina Kotek did not, you know, step down from her role as a member when she ran for governor last time. I did, but I don't believe she did. I know Dan Rayfield didn't. It's common to be able to serve in a citizen legislature that's part-time. I'm no longer the Republican leader, so that does take quite a bit off my plate to be able to free up some time to be able to run for governor. But I am just grateful to have the opportunity to serve the Senate district. So it was half of my House seat plus the half of another House seat that, you know, brought in communities from the Dells all the way over to East Multnomah County, including Hood River and places in between. And I'm just incredibly grateful to be representing those communities now. And that's just a part of the work. And so showing up and having listening sessions and responding to constituent concerns is the same as it has been all along for my House seat. Only now I have some new communities to get to know some community leaders and to have the privilege of representing them. I'm really excited at the prospect.
About a minute left. Take that time to talk about why folks should support you.
You know, Oregon is at a crossroads right now where we have the privilege as Americans to be able to choose better for the future of our state. And I believe that this is our time to stand together. This is our time to rebuild. This is our time to rise together. And we can turn our state around. We can be number one in the nation for job opportunities. We can be number one in the nation for access to addiction services to get folks clean and help them stay sober. We can be number one in the nation to support our kids in our schools and make sure that they get a world-class education. It will only happen if we work together. And I have the privilege of going across the state. I'm asking Oregonians for their vote. I'm asking them for their support, for the really great privilege of being accountable to them to fight for the future of our state together. And I'm excited about this upcoming year, and I just ask Oregonians to reach out at christinefororegon.com.
All right, Christine Drazen, candidate for governor. What's that website address again?
It's christinefororegon.com.
All right, Christine Drazen, thanks for being on today.
Thank you.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.